Welcome back to the Pilot Network Podcast. I'm Matt, your co-host, and we're back today with episode number 3 of a 3-part series of my interview with Bill Braxton. Enjoy.
Bill Potter was a good friend of mine, and he and I sat down in the front row, and here come, of course, Frank Sinatra and all the gamblers, the big gamblers.
Sure.
Came in, and they were performing up on the stage. And we were in uniform, and Louis Prima came down and sat at our table. He was the band leader while somebody was performing. And he says, "You boys can have anything you want to drink or to eat." And I said, "Well, I'm afraid we drank too much." We stayed there till something like 3 in the morning.
Oh, no.
And then we went back, I guess, maybe 8 or 10 times to Las Vegas.
Okay.
But I was in Las Vegas when I first went to Nellis.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing out on the strip was the Desert Inn.
Sure.
And the mafia completely ran that place.
And now from the runway at Nellis, you can see the strip. It's all desert and then the strip. It feels like it's right off the end of the runway.
Makes it easy to see the place coming in.
Sure does.
But I had some good flying at Nellis when I was there. I was there about 6 months. And one day the base commander was really storming. He was mad as hell. And I came in and sat down. He says, "Don't sit there. Get out of here." And I thought, "What the hell have I done?" He says, "Go outside and wait. I'll talk to you later." I thought maybe I had done something. I hadn't done anything except I was the base adjutant, so I was sitting right there at the colonel's elbow, practically. And he called me in. He says, "Who the hell do you know in Washington?" I said, "Uh-oh." Colonel Blair wasn't there anymore.
Uh-huh.
What happened, we had AT-6s and P-51s.
Mm-hmm.
But we had about, you could get an airplane anytime you wanted to.
Sure.
And you had, at that time, we had a local regulation that you had to take across country at least once a year of at least 7 days, where you had to fly every day and keep up your flying. That was the idea. So first thing, Peggy, my wife, came from Washington. And, of course, I knew all of her family and everything. I said, "Well..." Plus, I knew a lot of friends of mine that had been in Vienna with me were stationed in the Pentagon. And I go to see a couple of friends. I get to Washington and walk into the Pentagon, and this friend of mine was there. He says, "Hey," he says, "weren't you at Langley Field a long time ago?" I said, "Yep." He says, "We have a colonel here from Langley Field." He says, "Let's go down and see him." And as soon as I walked in the door, the colonel jumped, "Braxton, what the hell are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm stationed in the other end of the world." He says, "You were stationed." He says, "I need a personnel officer right here."
There it is.
And that was the head of the Air National Guard,
mm-hmm.
The colonel. When I got back, my orders had gone back to the base.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the colonel was mad about. He tried to stop the transfer, but finally I saw the thing came across my desk. It says, "If we hadn't wanted him, we wouldn't have asked for him. Send him on his orders immediately to the Pentagon." And the colonel couldn't do anything about that.
Sure.
So I ended up the whole Korean War in the Pentagon. Real good job flying my own airplane and traveling around the country.
Nice.
I had a strange career because I don't think anybody had anything like that. I held every rank from private on up to master sergeant, warrant officer, and all ranks up to lieutenant colonel.
Wow.
So I held every rank from private to lieutenant colonel, including warrant officer.
Do you have a shadow box with all the rank kind of like laid out?
No. Yeah. In fact, we were getting ready to do that. Doug was helping me. He got a a thing to the, made me a big poster, picture poster, right. One of those for the Caterpillar Club for bailing out. But I had just got my, you know, we had, I don't know if the Air Force still has, you have three sets of wings, regular wings, slick wings, mm-hmm. and then you have a senior pilot. There, you still have a senior pilot with a star on the wings.
Yep, so we have senior pilot and command pilot, which has the wreath also.
Yep. Yeah, and each one of senior pilots had to have 1,000 hours mm-hmm. and a certain amount of instrument time and 5 years uh-huh. as a pilot.
Sure.
Command pilot was 15 years mm-hmm. plus 3,000 hours. And a green instrument card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's funny because I was getting ready to be discharged in August 1959. And I had just gotten 15 years as a pilot. And just that month, and I just gave you a copy of the command pilot thing. Yeah.
When did you retire? How many years in
August
did you retire?
1959.
I had 24 years. Total service.
Wow. That is an amazing career and story. It's unbelievable. So with the pilot network, a lot of times we're kind of in that transition to where a lot of mostly Air Force pilots, you know, just because it's the largest flying service, but the Navy and the Army has pretty good representation also, Marine Corps too. A lot of guys are transitioning, and gals are transitioning out of the military aviation world into the airlines. Did you see that happening back when you were?
No, nothing like that. We were still, because we had the Vietnam War and the Korean War. So we were wartime. Well, I didn't get into Vietnam except to Cat B with the French.
Sure.
So, and by that time, the French had given up. And we didn't get into that war until another 5 or 6 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And by that time you were retired.
Yeah, I was retired already.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you fly after you left the Air Force, after you retired?
Well, I went to Miami because I'd never been to college, and I had now. Boy, I got the GI Bill, and Florida was yelling for teachers. I says,
uh-huh.
I'll be a school teacher. I get summer off and all of this. Never had a summer off. And all the years I taught, I was always busy going to school or doing something else. Anyway, I went to Miami and never been to college. And some of the schools, like Florida State, which I applied to first, they wanted me to come and take a bunch of exams and all that. Miami said, you just show up on registration day and pay the tuition and you're in.
Right.
And it turned out a really good thing for me. And I think of how lucky I was a lot of times in my life where certain things happened. The Russians had set off Sputnik.
Mm-hmm.
And the Congress had just passed an education bill, some billions of dollars, for science teachers, math teachers, and for some strange reason, foreign language teachers. And so I had been to Germany and spoke a few words of German. So when I got to Miami, I said, well, I'll take German. And that's what I did.
And you ultimately got a PhD in German studies, correct?
I did, yeah. Here's what happened. When I graduated from Miami, with this education bill Congress had, they set up language institutes at various colleges around the country, and you go for a year, and that's all you did, that work on that language. And I applied for 3 or 4 of these things and ended up with one at Kent State, and I got a master's with it, that. And I got along pretty good with the head of the institute. We go to school every morning at 8 o'clock, and from 5 until 5 o'clock, you had to speak German. No English whatsoever.
Sure.
Ate lunch and got together. Most of us got together at night, and we spoke German all the time. And I got my master's out of that. And the head of the department, a German department at Kent State, and he said, "What are you going to do when you get here?" I said, "I'm going back to Miami and teach school." He said, "No, I want you to stay in right here and work on your PhD." I said, "Have you looked at the paper lately? The temperature in Miami is 80 degrees. The temperature up here." I said, "It snowed 3 days ago." And I said, "I'm going back. I can't stand this." So I got back down here and applied immediately for a fellowship at the University of Minnesota. And I went right back up there next summer and did a year and a half study. And there again, they wanted me to come and live on the campus for a year. And I said, I still have a house in Miami. Sure. I don't have a house, I have a job in Miami. So I gave up. But all the time I was teaching, first I taught 2 years in Miami, Hialeah High School. And all the time I was teaching, I was back in, registered for night classes and summer classes and all that. And I have, with the University of Minnesota, I had enough for PhD, but the requirement to spend a year on the campus. And I said, no, it isn't really worth it. As far as salary was concerned, you didn't get that much more money as a doctorate.
Sure.
But what it did is offered a lot of other things. But I taught at Hialeah for 2 years, and I got a call from the chairman of the department at Stetson University. Mm-hmm. And he says, somebody's recommended you for a job up here. And he says, "We're short a German teacher. Would you be interested?" He says, "Come up and talk to me. We'll see." I said, "Yeah, definitely I'm interested in college teaching." So I went up, and as soon as I walked in the door, he says, "Yeah, we need a German teacher right now." So I moved my family to DeLand. And we stayed at one big disappointment in my life. I got my 7 years in for tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And the board of directors, civilians, whoever, and they decided they wouldn't give any tenure for the next 2 or 3 years because they were short of money. And I said, "Well, no tenure. I'm not staying here. I'm making enough money anyway, military and that."
Right.
So I was in my seventh year, and Easter time, during Easter vacation, I said, "The hell with it. I'm going back to Miami." We always liked, my wife and the kids all loved Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down to Miami, and Miami was in a building frenzy. They were opening 3 new high schools. I signed a contract at all 3 schools. I was going to pick the best one at the end of the year.
Sure.
And the guy says, "You teach French?" I said, "Well, I'm a language teacher. I can probably teach French." I didn't know a word of French. And on the way back to Stetson to finish up my year, I passed through the Cape Kennedy area. And the first thing I saw was a high school right on the beach. And I said, "Well, I'll stop in there and see what they got." And they had the German teacher had just retired that day. And I got it was a really good job. The high school in Satellite Beach, right near Patrick Air Force Base. In fact, the wall of the base is right by the high school.
Sure.
And we had, most of the kids were military kids, and they had a really going ROTC program, Air Force ROTC and all that. As the principal told me, he says, "We don't have discipline problems in this school." Of course, he ran the thing with an iron fist.
Sure.
He'd call the kids in and scare the hell out of them. What he usually do is call the base commander, Patrick, and the base commander would call the guy in, the father, and says, "You get this kid straightened out, or you're going to Alaska or some such place. So the school was a really good job. I set my own hours, and my classes were small. And
right on the beach, too.
Yeah, it was right on the beach. And Patrick at the Officers Club was right down the street. So I could go, and half the kids, I'd meet their parents at the bar at Patrick. Finally, I said, I've got enough time to retire as a high school or a high school teacher.
Sure.
And I don't need the money anyway. And that's why, and Patty was over here and was pregnant with one of the kids. So, and my wife says, I'd like to live in Tampa. So we decided to move over here. And she had a stroke and died. Well, she was pretty sick for about a year and a half. But we'd had 52 years. We had our 50th wedding anniversary at the University of Tampa.
Oh, wow.
Patty's husband was something with the board of directors there at Tampa University.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the use of the building, the main building there, to have a 50th wedding anniversary. So, and that's when Peggy had a stroke right after that.
Sure.
Yeah. So that pretty much covers my life.
With regards to your aviation career, what's do you remember anything that was what you consider to be your biggest setback or kind of a challenge that you had to overcome?
In education?
During your flying career.
Oh, during my flying grades.
Does anything stand out in your mind?
I guess at the beginning or about when I got it, maybe 75 or 80 hours in fighters. I got to the point I didn't like a fighter because we'd have every day an engine would quit on somebody on takeoff and we had two or three guys killed. And I said, there's got to be something better in the Air Force. And I never thought about the ferry command. That's what would have been a dream job.
Uh-huh.
And just by accident, I got that.
Right. And, what was your favorite? You flew a lot of airplanes. What was your favorite one? Did you like the Goonie Bird, or it sounds like?
Well, I'd have to say the 119, because it's the first time I'd had an airplane with engines big enough that even if you lost one of them, the other one is still a good, safe airplane.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was probably, I think that and the C-45, of course, was not a regular line outfit airplane, but it was a hell of a good airplane.
Yeah. What do you remember about the P-51? Was that a fun airplane to fly? Or is it a handful?
To tell you that, when I graduated from flying school, got my wings, I called up Peggy, Nellie.
Mm-hmm.
We were engaged at this time. Of course, Peggy had already done that. Anyway, I get to Washington to pick up Nellie, or to Virginia, because she lived in Virginia. And she met me in Richmond. And the boy, two or three boys with me and had girlfriends meet us in Richmond. And that's the day we got flying school. 44G is August the 4th, 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove straight through to Washington. And she, of course, met me with, I don't love you anymore. I love somebody else. And I wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah, no one ever is.
Back at Ocala, where I was stationed,
right.
I had already rented a house and getting everything to get married. So I went on back, and for a year, the best time I had in the whole Air Force for my whole career, I had a year of running around the country because they didn't know what to do with us. They had so many fighter pilots. So our first assignment out of flying school was Louisiana State University. And they put us in the girls' dormitory and left the girls there.
Mm-hmm. The fox girls, in the hen house right there.
Girls moved over to, I knocked on this door and this girl comes to the door and says, how'd you get in here? This is a woman's dormitory. I said, I'm in the military and they sent us over here. I said, I'm supposed to have this room. She says, with me? I said, well, that's up to me. I don't know. If it's up to me, yes. She says, well, we'll do this one night. And says, we're going to have to make some other arrangements. Anyway, she became my girlfriend. Uh-huh. We were, I guess, 2 or 3 months there. No airplanes. We didn't have any fighters. They had enough P-38s and P-51s.
Mm-hmm.
So back, they took our whole group out of LSU and moved us to Waycross, Georgia, where we got P-40s. We were all expecting P-51s and, mm-hmm. and P-38s at the time. And the P-40 was okay. I love the P-40. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun flying. But
all three of them are gorgeous airplanes, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. The day I came back from Richmond after seeing Nellie and came back, and I thought I was going to fly P-40s right then. And we go down to the flight line the first morning, and 4 or 5 P-51s were sitting there. And a lieutenant says, come on, we'll go take the 51. We'll take this one here. I said, what? That's a P-51. I'm supposed to be flying 40s. He said, well, you'll get plenty of time in P-40s. But he says, get in. Single ply says, I don't know anything about it. I don't even know how to start. He said, well, I'll get you started. He got the engine running. And he says, that's the runway and take off on that. Your gliding speed coming in, it was about 130. He says, be sure you watch what you're doing. And I says, I don't know anything. He said, you don't have to know anything. You got a stick and you got a throttle, and that's all you need.
Just be a pilot, right?
He had just come back from combat flying. Anyway, that was my first introduction to P-51.
Yeah.
And I didn't fly it anymore then for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have enough time. I maybe 20, 30 hours
okay.
in 51.
Sure.
But I liked the P-40. It was a good airplane.
Good airplane.
But we were flying old airplanes, P-40s here, mm-hmm. that had already been in combat, and they had all kind of problems with them.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most rewarding part of any career you've had, but especially your flying career? What was the most rewarding part of that?
I guess the fact that somebody was always grabbing me off, and I was always dealing with people 16 ranks above me. And I'm sure that getting even up to Lieutenant Colonel was a result of Colonel Blair. Because a lot of other people, when I was in flying school, a year and a half was at the height of the war, and everybody was getting promoted, but not in flying school.
Mm-hmm.
You were by the time I got around to making captain, I would have been captain 2-3 years before that. And if I'd have stayed in the adjutant's business, as they told me at Langley Field, the colonel told me at Langley, he says, if you stay here at Langley, you'll be a major this year. And so, and they promoted me. The reason I ask about that, I made first lieutenant in 2 months. And the only reason...
It takes 2 years now.
Is that what it is? Yeah. The colonel, I was the adjutant, and I, as a second lieutenant, I took in this bunch of promotions to first lieutenant. And the colonel asked me, says, I don't see your name here. I said, sir, I have to be a second lieutenant for 3 months. He says, not on my base, you don't. He's scribbled out on one of those copies and put it right up on top. And so I made first lieutenant 2 months after I got out. I said, man, I'm going to be a general here. And he told me later, he says, if you had stayed there, we were getting ready to promote you to captain. But the Air Force needed a first lieutenant at the fighter squadron.
Sure.
So that put me into flying career. I'm not sorry. That's the colonel told me, he says, if you want to stay in the Air Force after the war as an officer, you got to be a lieutenant, or you got to be a pilot.
Right.
He says, we're going to get rid of all these non-rated officers. he didn't know. Nellie and I were in Hawaii when we first got married, I think. We got married in 99, and I think in 200 or 201, We went to Hawaii, and I had a friend who was had been in Vienna with me. In fact, he was the guy with Harold Stassen. We were a crew together, and he got out and went to Delta, and he was the chief pilot of Delta, and he got every year. He came down to see me, and he says, "You know," he says, "we get free buddy passes where we can have members of our family go free with Delta." And he says, I don't have anybody to give those to." He says, "My wife his daughter was a stewardess, and his wife had been a stewardess with Delta." Mm-hmm. And he says, "They all get these passes." And he says, "From now on, I'll give you mine." And that's where Nellie and I got into the traveling business. Mm-hmm. And we went everywhere. Went to Hawaii 3 times. Went to, all over Europe. We went every place I'd been before.
Sure. And took her with you this time.
I don't know the last trip, I don't think I mentioned it in the book, happened after the last book was published. Nellie was 85 and I was 92. And we went up to Jacksonville and took Space Available flight to Italy. Mm-hmm. And stayed 3 weeks. Sure. And that was a really exciting time because we couldn't even climb up the stairs on the C-5 where in the back you had to climb up.
Right.
We had to have the enlisted crew members push up the stairs. And people thought, "What in the hell are you doing?" It's 92, being in the air. I was in good shape.
Yeah. You said your 100th birthday is coming up later this year, right?
1st of May.
1st of May. Congratulations. That is a huge accomplishment. It
hope you do the same thing.
I hope so, too. I don't know if my wife does, but we'll see. I guess the last thing I'll just ask you, and then we'll wrap it up. I know I'd love to do this again and ask more questions about specific things, but if you could give advice to aviators of any skill level, you know, what kind of advice would you give talking to a group of pilots?
Please be a pilot. Don't be a non-rated officer. Yeah.
You're speaking to the choir here. Yeah.
I have a friend who was in Vienna with me. He's 96 years old. He still flies. And he's got the last time he told me, he says, 37,000 hours flying time.
What do you have?
He had been a test pilot when they were picking the astronauts. Okay. And they picked him for one of the original astronauts, and he turned it down. He was at Williams Field as a test pilot. And he says, "I don't know, who was the other guy, the guy that was real famous?" "No, he was the first guy to fly the speed of sound."
Oh, Chuck Yeager?
Chuck Yeager. He was a good friend of Chuck Yeager's. And he was out there at that same time as a test pilot for them. And I know when we were in Vienna, he was a nut about flying. He'd sit down to base operations and sleep on the floor there so he'd catch the first flight that went out. Because we had so many pilots, it was kind of hard to get flying time. But he was on almost every flight going out all over the place. Anyway, he said, told me the last time I talked to him, he says, since he was 17 years old, he couldn't remember a single week in all that time that he didn't fly somewhere. And when he got out of the Air Force, he bought his own airplane. Mm-hmm. When he got out of the Air Force, there's an outfit in Texas called Sea Systems. It's a part of the CIA thing. And they gave him a job as their commercial pilot. And he flew with them for 10 years. He says every day he took the airplane up, even if he didn't have anything to do, just to fly around the field.
Sure.
Just to get his flying time in. So that's the thing.
Very cool.
If you're going to be a pilot, work at it.
Go fly. Awesome.
You got too many people. I saw people in the Pentagon that were scared of flying. They didn't fly, you know, flying 4 hours a month. You're not even very proficient.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
And of course, I got out before the jets had come in. I think Korean War was F-86s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but I never got a chance to fly a jet.
Yeah. Would you have liked to?
Well, called me the Space A kid. Some of the pilots up in Charleston would come in and says, "What, you're here again?" And I says, "Yeah, do you have any seats?" Because I went back and forth to Germany because I had a program with my high school students with a high school in Germany. And I'd go over there maybe 5 or 6 times a year. Used to go up to Charleston, get right out.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. That was an amazing story.
Well, I don't know if I could talk anymore for a while.
I know your voice is hoarse, but I will get out of your hair now. But thank you so much, Bill. I really appreciate it. It was awesome.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it.